Welcome back to another episode of Awareness to Action Enneagram Podcast. My name is Creek, and I'm with my fundamentally okay co-host, Maria Jose, Vinita, and Lee Fields.
loved it.
Yeah, Mario is still out of the country. He is in Spain enjoying...
He's up in the air at the moment, I guess.
Yeah, he can actually say... Every time I've been there.
Yes.
This is only the second time he's been there, correct?
In Spain, he would kill you. Yeah. He would kill you.
you will not be fundamentally okay.
You will not. Because he's very, very proud of how many times he's been there. And I don't want to even say how many, because it's lots. Over 10 or even more than 15. So, yeah.
Multiples of two.
Okay.
Yes.
Maybe I'm remembering the country wrong. What's the place that he always says every time I go, and he's only been there once?
Yeah, that's every country that he's been there once.
But, except for Spain.
Yeah, but Spain, he can really say that.
Fair enough. All right.
So, and don't you dare remove these parts.
No, I won't. Right. So today we are talking about some practical tips on growth, especially as it relates to the neglected strategy, the connecting points, your primary strategy. So let's start with defining the connecting points.
Great.
Maria Jose?
Good idea. So we see the connecting points as the strategies that most complement or that are part of our profile. We use them in different ways, under stress, adaptively, like in different ways. We don't see it as something that you go in one direction when you're fine or when you're healthy, or in the other direction when you're unhealthy or disintegrating. We don't see it that way. We do see that we go both ways, in both adaptive and maladaptive ways. But there's a particular dynamic on each direction. So we have the support strategy, which is the one that kind of reinforces our preferred strategy. So I'm a type one. I am striving to feel perfect. The support strategy is type four, striving to feel unique. Feeling unique for me, it's not an end in itself, but it's a way in which sometimes I feel even more perfect, because what I do is unique, it's aesthetically pleasing, because it also allows me to not feel bad when I make a mistake, because I'm just worrying so much about it. I'm the only person worrying. So I can go there in different ways. And it's the same for every strategy. The support strategy reinforces the preferred strategy. Mm-hmm. Now, the neglected strategy is the one that I go to sometimes, but I neglect using it at times when I should, when it would be useful. That's why we call it neglected strategy. I don't neglect it all the time, but at key times I do. And that's something that has to do with how we distort it. So again, type one, striving to feel perfect. And when I think about striving to feel excited, feels like, oh, it's risky. Bad things can happen. Too excited means that I might be irresponsible or lose control of myself and not do the perfect thing. And that creates a contradiction where I try to avoid it, but it's there. It's there anyway, so I kind of push it aside. And that causes me trouble. So working on that, working on how to not distort it, but see it more objectively, and work on the contradiction. It's a growth path that has proven my experience to be very useful.
I experience it very much within myself. And I think that my experience of it, like you're talking about this neglected strategy that sort of feels unsafe, I think that for someone relating with me or coping with me, that dynamic can feel kind of confusing, right? Like just practically looking at it, I'm this sort of mess of contradictions sometimes. And I think, would you say that's true of all of the types in that, or something similar to that is true of all of the types in this inherent contradiction between their preferred strategy and other things that are contradictory?
Yeah, I think it is the case. It feels contradictory inside of us, but also from the outside, because it almost, because we push it aside, because we're not integrating it more adaptively, and we're trying not to do it, and sometimes we go there, but then we contract. It is less kind of fluid, and so the contradiction, it's more evident. And it's almost like it goes against our public identity.
It's sounding like it can feel and look inconsistent, right? Especially if I'm sort of intimidated by my neglected strategy feeling. Like I might start like, oh yes, I'm going to do this. And then be like, no, wait, bad idea.
Too much of it.
Too much.
Let's go back to normal.
Yeah. Right. Let's go back to normal. Exactly.
Warning.
Yes, that's how it feels, Creek. That's exactly how it feels.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's great. So we were just talking about type one neglect strategy at 7. So, Jose, tell us about what that looks like and what the distortions may pop up.
Yeah, so I think I started mentioning it before, but it's, I want to feel perfect. And that has a more kind of rigid, rule-bounded kind of feeling. Excited, on the other hand, feels like open, free, you know, expansive. And that feels, as we were saying, risky. That feels like too much excitement will make me lose control and not do the right thing. There's also these kind of emotional spam where ones tend to not feel too happy or too sad or too this or too that. And too much excitement also goes beyond the proper boundaries of emotional displays for one. But the one has kind of a little 7, and we all do, inside. And you want to feel excited, and you want to make jokes, and you want to laugh, and you want to relax, but it feels threatening. So you kind of go there, but at some point you feel that it's enough, that it's risky, and kind of you contract and go back to trying to feel perfect the way you know, because it's kind of like the opposite. That's how it feels for all types. Feeling excited in this way that I'm representing it feels the opposite of feeling perfect, but it is there. And I think that's the important thing. It's not like any other strategy. For the one, the neglected strategy at point 7 is something that I tend to go to. And kind of pushing it aside creates this contradiction that we call restraint versus indulgence. So restraint is what I believe as a one is going to make me feel perfect. It's going to get me there. But I want to indulge. And I want to eat these things that I shouldn't be eating. I want to buy these things that I shouldn't be buying. I want to do these things that I shouldn't be doing. And I want to do them, but I want to kind of restrain. And I think this is important, because feeling perfect, or being perfect is kind of part of my public identity. I don't want people to know that there's a part of me that wants to indulge. So I tend to do these things when nobody's watching, so nobody can judge me for it. And then you find, when we started teaching these things, Mario used to always give the example of, I don't know, the priest or whatever who was found with a kid. But you don't need to go that far. It's a chocolate that you hide in your night table, or things that you just do without trying that people don't find out, or justifying them in a way that seems more rational and not just, I just like it. I remember I used to have these desire to buy technological things like gadgets and things, and the computer and then the tablet and then the phone and this and that. And I used to justify, no, I need it because of this, until I said, you know what? I just like it. Now, understanding that it's me just trying to justify it so I would not be seen as less perfect. And this is what the trick is. And saying, okay, I will continue to indulge. I know that it's risky, but I will not hide it. I'll make it part of my public identity. So I'll just accept that I like it. I'll just do it when it's when people are watching these things. There's this integrating that aspect of ourselves allows us to see it at plain sight and maybe not even need to hide it, but you do it more adaptively. You do it at times and you don't do it. You don't need to do it because you're not kind of rejecting it. You can decide when to do it and or when not to do it. And that, the only way in which I can integrate that more effectively is understanding that I will feel even more perfect when I do.
Am I hearing too, when you're saying that you make it more public, it's that you're making it more public to yourself as well, like acknowledging this contradiction within yourself, not just to say, I'll have the chocolate visible with other people or tell people that I want to have the chocolate, but resolving that conflict within yourself is acknowledging to you as part of that public.
Yes.
Right.
It includes that, but it in public in front of other people too.
Yes. Yes. I meant both and.
Yeah. And like be more relaxed around doing those things. I can talk about it, not necessarily do it in front of people, all of these things, but it's part of who I am. I enjoy doing those things. And you know, the funny thing for me and what made me see it, the value of it, is that I was once facilitating an Enneagram workshop, and there was a woman who I had met for other reasons before the workshop, and she attended. And I asked them, why are you here? And she said, because since I've met you years ago, you seem happier.
Wow.
And
what an insult.
Yeah. It was, I think, the best thing that I could have heard. And I think it has to do with that. So being more at peace with that part of myself allows me to be more relaxed and happier and live that striving to feel excited, not as a threat, but as something that will make me feel more perfect. People around me prefer me more relaxed and happy than the absence of mistakes, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Or at least some wine in your hand.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's why I do it. And I show the glass. I'm not drinking wine now because I was going to have a meeting later, but now I don't. So I might rethink it. No,
we could pause. Okay.
But it's the work for a one, part of the work is seeing those things that are already there and understand that people are not going to think poorly of you if they know that you do that, but are going to think even more highly. You will be more attractive. You will be more like a normal human being who breathes and you will be able to have, I think, more meaningful relationships when you show those aspects of yourself.
And when you experience them.
Yeah.
Right? Like just the mindset of being in that place of being more fully with what is in that moment. I mean, to go to heavy Enneagram work lingo.
Lee, what's something in that category that works for you?
I'm sorry. What's something in the category of what Maria Jose was just saying?
Indulging yourself in public.
Indulging myself in public. Well, asking questions sometimes like that. I don't understand what you just said, and I could bluster through it. And I would be, I'll invoke Mario a little bit about often certain, frequently mistaken, right? Like I can blow through something, but if I just say I don't understand the question, it opens up a lot more possibility for a real conversation, even though I will in the moment be showing a mistake that I didn't understand the question, right? That's the example that comes most quickly to mind here on this day when I'm fundamentally fine.
All right. Anything else before we move on to two? All right.
No.
Great.
Well, I'm thrilled to introduce two to you. And Maria Jose, are you good to discuss the dynamic with the two and its neglected strategy?
I am.
Support strategy.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So type two wants to, striving to feel connected. And that's how they see the world. And they have like a narrative on around what's going to make them feel more connected and less connected. And that's how they filter the world. Of course, not all the time, not in every situation, but a lot of times. And the neglected strategy is point four, which is striving to feel unique. So in their minds, striving to feel unique gets distorted. And it's, of course, the opposite of feeling connected. So it's feeling isolated. If I feel unique, then it means that I'm not, it doesn't add points to feeling connected. So I'll neglect it. I'll try not to go that way. But again, there's a part of the two that wants to feel unique, that wants to take care of your own needs, look inwards, think about how I feel, what I need, what I want. But that feels threatening because people are not going to want to connect with me if I'm taking care of myself, if I'm thinking about me too much or at all. So that's what happens. But because I avoid it, I neglect it, I don't fill up that need that I have, I expect other people to do it for me. So if I'm not taking care of myself, people should. Other people should, because I'm giving all of this, but then they are not taking care of my needs. So it creates this contradiction that it's giving, I'm giving, and I want to give, versus envy. All these people are getting all of this attention that I am not getting. Look at how the mother of these other people got this present or got invited to go to this place, or they visit her so often. And all of these kinds of demands on the people around me, that because I feel envious, because I want other people to take care of myself, because I am not doing it as I would like to. So when you stop seeing it as feeling unique being the opposite of feeling connected, and you understand that, yeah, I do want to pay attention to myself, I do feel envious of these people, but if I take care of my own needs, if I spend time with myself and nurture what I need to nurture there, I will be able to connect in a healthier way. I will be able to give without expecting anything, any attention, people to be grateful or anything, because I'll be taking care of my own needs. So I'll be able to connect better. So it's not against, but mm-hmm. it reinforces or it gives another dimension to the connection. It's a lot healthier. And that's the only way in which I'll stop neglecting it.
I'm hearing in each of these, and I'm anticipating that I will throughout the rest of our trip around the circle, that naming these things to ourselves, becoming aware of them ourselves, is the first step in being able to tangle with the contradictory pull that we feel it, because then we can see a bigger picture
yeah.
of perspective of, even though it feels counterintuitive, if I do this thing, I'll be better fortified and resourced to ultimately feel the way I want to feel.
Yep.
Right. But it's just expanding that story. I hear so much on this podcast about telling ourselves better stories, having a better narrative and our understanding of ourselves.
Yes.
And we're outlining the awareness to action process.
Yep.
Awareness, authenticity, and action. So
yep.
that's what's going on.
For free. For free.
Yeah, however, if you want to be spending money, we have a workshop in Nashville.
Yeah, when Mario gets back from Spain
again. So you can go to enneagramsubtypes.com and check out the workshop that we're doing. So commercial over, and go ahead, Marise.
Becoming aware of the distortion, this is for all types, and trying to integrate that neglected strategy doesn't mean that I'll become a four.
Right.
It is certain things, baby steps. So it doesn't mean that from now onwards, I'll be like Creek, you know? No.
No one needs onwards, that.
No one ever will.
I'll start doing certain things, small things, that have to do with taking care of myself, that have to do with looking at my own needs, a couple of things, step by step. Mm-hmm. Because that's the other thing. That's the other distortion, that when we think about integrating something, it feels like we need to do it all, and it's not needed. And that's a kind of a roadblock for us to do it.
So can you give an example of maybe homework that you've given to a two client recently?
I think that in my experience these days, a lot of people are missing having time for themselves to, I don't know, do sports, go to the gym, and that's in the workplace and outside of the workplace. And they just can't find the time in their agenda to make those things fit in. Or it could be something that I want to do, I don't know, go to the movies. So I would start with something really small, once a week, that you put in your agenda, but it's for you. And look, this is CEO level or, you know, anybody. Not only twos, actually, but for a two, what is the one thing that you would really enjoy doing that it's for you? Just do it.
And since we all have these connecting points, then we can borrow other people's tips. Like, I am happy to share my type one tip of having chocolate when I want it in public mm-hmm. with type two, mm-hmm. if that is something that they would like to put on their calendar.
Awesome. All right. So let's go to the next point, striving to feel outstanding, and then a neglected strategy, striving to feel secure. Maria Jose. Take it away.
Yeah, so you want to feel outstanding. And in the three's mind, it's fulfilling kind of my goals, going for my objectives, and accomplishing all of these things that I've set up targets for myself. And feeling secure feels like average. That's the distortion. Feeling secure, it's like I won't want to take risks. I will not want to stand out. If I look for too much support, I will not be able to, again, stand out. So it feels like the opposite. There's a part of me that wants to feel secure that sure that I'd be able to accomplish these goals, that I'll be have the skills to do what I'm determined to do, that I will have enough goals, that I will have enough challenges. It's all of these things make me anxious as a three. But even standing in front of a room, I feel anxious. Am I going to be able to do it as I want to do it? But I feel almost proud of how that doesn't show up, that I can hide it. That's what I think. In many cases, it shows up anyway. So that anxiety is there. And it looks like the contradiction is achievement versus anxiety. So I have this anxiety that makes me go faster, that makes me not see certain things. So it's not that good. And I don't want to, and I want to hide it. So I want to achieve, but I'm anxious. When I look at that anxiety, and looking at anxiety as an emotion, that it's a signal that points us to something. And that is something in the future that could be a risk or a problem. And when I look at those things, I can reflect on, okay, so do I need any other skills? Do I need any help? Do I really want to set all of these goals for myself or not? So I can reflect on all of those things. And at the end of the day, feel even more outstanding because I'll pay attention to the help or skills that I need or all the goals that I've set up for myself and be able to accomplish them even better. So I can feel even more outstanding if I pay attention to these anxiety that I do have, but I try to neglect.
So I'm hearing that part of what the sixth strategy offers is slowing down enough to make sure you're resourced and prepared instead of like running into just the task itself to try to get it checked off the list.
I think it's true, though I wouldn't frame it as slowing down to my client.
That's not a winner.
Yeah. Well, stop listening.
Pausing
there.
Ever so right slightly.
Yes. They stop listening. So I think that if you want to get there in the long term, faster and better, you need to pay attention to these things.
Well, pay attention's good.
Yeah.
That does not imply slowing down at all.
No.
Right.
It might feel like slowing down in the short term, but in the long term, mm-hmm. you'll get there faster and better.
Oh. See, this is why you are the highly skilled professional that you are, because that was a brilliant sentence. Like,
and it works.
Not a single extra word, and yet all of them pack a punch.
Yeah, and understanding that they might feel the resistance and might interpret what you're telling them as slowing down. So you can put it on the table. So how do you feel this is going to go? And it could be, yeah, it might slow things down, or it might make me look like I'm not outstanding, really. But it's not like hiding yourself in the group. It's getting more resources and reflecting on your goals and all of that so that you can feel even more outstanding.
Yeah.
It's like gathering fuel before you launch the rocket.
Yeah.
No?
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And along the way, that was my hesitation. And along the way, so that the rocket, not sure how they can stop along the way, but
in our world, they can't. Yeah, well. It's going to be an extra orbital refueling while they're in motion.
Lunar and then Mars. That's
right. Yeah. Infinity and beyond. That's what we're saying, Dries. Yeah. You're almost there.
Yeah.
I think that, again, just to reinforce to listeners that the dynamic of this is the same for all the types. It's like this resistance that you're going to feel, tangling with that in an authentic way to get you closer to your preferred way of being, right? It's naming a dynamic to become aware of it, to make more conscious choices.
Yeah. And look, to be honest, the type 3 clients that I've had, most can't really hide the anxiety. You can tell. And that doesn't make them seem outstanding. That in some way, people see the anxiety. So pretending to hide it doesn't work. And it's the opposite of feeling outstanding. So looking at it and addressing it, it's better.
Mm-hmm. And hiding it from yourself doesn't do you any favors, right?
Yeah.
The time has come, Creek. It's fours.
Let's just skip it.
Please.
Nope. Save it for last?
No.
All right. Striving to feel distinct.
There it is. The Creek special.
Yes. You know. Trying to feel unique.
Yeah.
Unless you're Creek, and then it's distinct.
Yep.
Well, unique or distinct.
Tell us about me.
So, put enough about threes.
So the neglected strategy is trying to feel perfect at point one. And the distortion is like, okay, so perfection is defined by a set of rules or standards. So you're perfect if you do things how they have to be done. And that is, could feel, at least for a while, it's like there's one objective way of doing them. If there's only one way to do things, then there's no way that if I go that route, I'm going to be unique. I'm going to be just like any other person who does things the right way or how they ought to be done. So it goes against feeling unique. So I don't want to go there because I'm different. I am not like everyone else. Besides, it's harder for me to not only be able to, but I don't want to. So it feels like I will be repressed of my authenticity, uniqueness. So I don't want to go there. But as we said, every type has a little, this is not literal, of course. There's a part of the four that wants to feel perfect, but, or wants to go there. But the contradiction in the four shows up like nonconformity. I will not conform to your rules, but you have to conform to mine. You know, you have everything that it takes to be perfect, and I'll demand or expect you to be. So they can be quite rigid in the expectations of others in terms of perfection. But don't you dare expect me to behave in a perfect way. Do you resonate with that?
I see no
problem
with this. So.
So can you share an example of how you live it? You don't need to name anyone or.
Yeah, for sure. In small ways, whether it's like cleanliness or organization or something like that. I'll be annoyed when there's dirty dishes and then I walk back in the kitchen and realize that they're mine. Something like that, you know? Small stuff like that, I suppose, is a good example of something like that.
What if we defined perfection uniquely, right? Instead of expecting perfection from someone or demanding perfection.
Yeah, I think that...
What if it's an ideal?
Yeah, and I think that the problem with the four is that in this permanent rebellion to the standards or to how things most people do things, they lose uniqueness because you're identifying yourself with the person who doesn't do all of these things. But that's not unique necessarily. It's not spontaneous either. So this nonconformity all the time and I'm generalizing here, but maybe sometimes, I don't know, conforming will make me even more unique. You know, so what's the unique me that has these things that sometimes I do them the socially perfect way and sometimes I don't? I can decide what the mix of that is. But the mindset of other people can do that, I don't. It's what doesn't allow them to go that down that route. So not everybody can do things perfectly because their happy lives are not that happy or perfect as they seem. And I can and maybe want to do certain things according to the standard, which will make a unique me that I decide, but not define it, but just rebelling against what's the standard.
Yeah, I mean, part of that is a reason that I chose to be, I worked towards being self-employed and mobile because I wanted to not have to wake up at a certain time or show up at a certain place and having more control over my life and realizing slowly, you know, so there might be some value and some level of consistency perhaps. So
I can be even more unique by doing things the standard way. It's not repressed. I'm not forced. It's my decision. I want to.
Sometimes.
Sometimes, as with every type. And it will make me feel even more unique, not less unique.
I can give you an example of something, a homework I've given a 4.
Good.
I don't know whether you'll like it or not.
Sure.
I don't think you will. It's to do your grocery shopping at not the good grocery store.
That's insulting.
You have to go to the bad grocery store. It's cheaper. It's quicker. There's not classical music in the produce section, but... But you don't have to identify with being a bad grocery shopper just because you went to the...
Yeah.
This is why I don't like going to Aldi, you know?
That's my God. You have to take your own bags and everything.
Yeah, me too. I have to say.
I'm with you. I'm totally with you. Line to 4.
Yeah. I was like, that seems like torture.
Put things in boxes? What?
It's hideous. The lighting's bad.
Yeah, maybe if I'm going to die, I could do that. But yeah, mm-hmm. I can buy less things at the nice place, but not.
Go. Yeah,
right.
Anyway,
I eat alternate days. It's called intermittent fasting. It'll be fine. Right. It's all the rage. It's really healthy for your mitochondria. Yeah. It's the best thing to do.
Exactly.
Choosing something that you're rebelling against, but that you would benefit from doing. And that could be anything. So it could be getting a full-time job or a...
doing taxes.
Oh.
No, not taxes. No. Please, no. Please don't make that be it.
If we continue with the full-time job thing, it could feel like the less unique thing ever, you know? It's just 9 to 5 and all of that. But it all has to do with the costs of not doing it, you know? And I don't want to convince you of anything, but maybe somebody else can benefit from it. And... if I don't have a full-time job, but then I'm not able to live the life, the unique life that I have kind of in my dreams, what's the point? Maybe I can have an even more unique life if I have a full-time job, but also have time to do the things that I enjoy more and can buy the things that I want to buy or spend the time with the people that I want to spend with. So what's really... the way in which I want to define unique in the long term. Mm-hmm. Is it just doing things differently from everyone? Or is it adhering to certain things that are more standard, but will allow me in the long term to feel even more unique and really unique?
Still don't like it, but yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't have to be for you. But for everyone, we all feel the impulse to go to the neglected strategy, but then contract. It is when we're in that dynamic that we need to think about this contradiction and rewrite this narrative that makes us distort the neglected strategy and see things in the long, in a longer term perspective. It's not for everything. It's not if things are going well, just keep on doing what you're doing. But when you feel the tension of wanting to go there and then feeling like there's a risk and wanting to go back to normal, it's when you can look at these things and understand that it's not really working as I would like it to. And instead of feeling, of seeing it as a the opposite of my preferred strategy, seeing how it can provide ways in which I will be able to feel even more unique if I do these things in the long term.
MJ, am I hearing that it's good for us to practice these things when we are comfortable, right? These tips or practical things that you're giving us, it's like, try this on a bunch of different times when you are feeling secure, where you have sort of built your capacity of feeling confident and secure in that otherwise sort of unfamiliar space. Greek would call it practicing intentional discomfort, right? Like if I intentionally go about trying these neglected strategy
practices,
activities, practices, that's the word. I knew there was one of those words. If I take those on as practices routinely, then it's easier for me not to contract against it when I'm confronted with something that brings up similar feelings.
Yeah.
Even if it's not always chocolate, okay, it's not always going to be chocolate.
Yeah, so yes, I think that the awareness of when I go there more naturally without before or without contracting, it's good because that makes me sort of own it and see how it's a part of me. And then a time will come when I feel this tension, this friction inside, and I will be able to first understand that it is a part of me, that I do it sometimes and feel comfortable with it. And then it's kind of challenging the distortion mm-hmm. and expanding the narrative so that I see things in a longer term perspective and see how instead of feeling less perfect, connected, outstanding, unique, I will feel even more if I do these things. That's kind of the process.
And we made it halfway around the circle in like just less than an hour.
Yeah. So we'll pick this back up next time. Thank you all for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Awareness to Action Enneagram podcast. If you're interested in more information or talking to Mario, MJ, or myself, feel free to reach out to us through the links in the show notes or by emailing info@awarenesstoaction.com. All episode transcriptions and further information can be found at awarenesstoaction.com/podcast.